Hey everyone, you're listening to the Working Triathlete Podcast with Derek Stone and Conrad Geringer. This podcast is devoted to helping you find maximum performance with deliberate efficiency. All right, hey Conrad, how's it going?
It's going well. Happy to do this podcast. It's been a minute.
We're back. I know we've been busy, so we apologize to our listeners, but we have some good stuff to bring to you. We're going to recap the World Championships. We'll talk about the PTO. Yeah, 70.3 World Championships. The PTO's partnership with World Triathlon and some exciting stuff happening down in Nashville. But yeah, it's been a busy season so far, and I guess we'll kick it off with the 70.3 Worlds.
It was pretty exciting. I think that the athletes sort of showed the world that to win a world championships event, you have to be balanced and you have to be fit. And if you look at the power numbers and the run paces that these athletes ran, and the fact that, you know, many of them are very young and were relatively unknown, I think that it's exciting. It's an exciting time. And I think it represents a changing of the guard, so to speak. I know that you had many pundits before the world champs saying, oh, so-and-so isn't here, so-and-so isn't there. But if you just look at the performance and the data, I mean, these athletes are next level compared to 10 years ago, 5 years ago. You sort of had these massive characters, these titans in years past or decades past in the long course world, and you can predict fairly accurately, you know, who the top five is going to be. But now we just have so many young athletes, and I think the fact that they grow up specializing in a sense in triathlon just means that there are more athletes who can throw down, you know, world beating performances, at least on the men's side. The women's side, all the main characters were there, but the depth of the men's side, it's unique when we look at it from a historical basis. But it was impressive because the course was pretty challenging in Finland, in Lahti. It's funny because we had athletes, we coach a bunch of athletes who did the race. And before they arrived, we were looking, and I think Ironman showed that the bike course was 1,700 feet of gain. And they said that the run was going to be flat. That was not the case. The bike was well over 2,000 feet of gain. Like, it was a fairly challenging bike course. And then the run was also challenging with a huge hill sort of out of transition. So the way it worked is you ran from transition, you did a loop around a track, and then you ran up this hill. And as I recall, I think it was like a 250 foot hill. It took 4 or 5 minutes to run up it, and you had to do that twice. There was also a loop, I think it was a 1.2 mile loop around, just on gravel right before the end of each lap. So it was an honest course. The reports were that it was a stunning and a beautiful course. So it seemed like a worthy place for a world championships to occur. So, but the results were pretty darn interesting. So you had on the men's side, you had Rico Bogan sort of crush it, and he's very young, a young German. He went 3:32, which was that is moving on that course, you know. On the women's side, it was sort of the usual suspects. You had Taylor Nibb of the U.S. dominate. Well, maybe she dominated less here than at St. George, because Kat Matthews and Imogen Simmons, they were less than 5 minutes back. So Taylor Nipshi went 353, Cat Matthews 357, Simmons went 357. So that's the top three there. And then on the men's side, you had Rico Bogan, he went 332. And then you had Frederick Funk, he went 333, 26, a minute back. And then Jan Stratman, he went 334. And then, you know, special shout out to working triathlete, Miguel Maddox. So this was just, so he competed at the world champs as a professional. And this was only his third professional race. And he did incredibly well. So he went 348, and that included a 114 run. So, you know, he was 25 seconds behind Ben Canute. He was less than a minute behind Matt Hansen. And, well, he beat Christian Blumenfeld. So
he beat the former Olympic champ and world champ, which is amazing. Yeah. Exactly. So going back to your, you know, you're talking about the depth of the fields, and I think both men's and women's fields are a little bit deeper than they have been in the past. You know, interesting enough, I was looking at results last night from like 12 years ago, just at like regional 70.3s. And, you know, it was pretty common just for like a sub four to, you know, just under 4 hours to win a race in the men's field. And that's just not the case anymore. And now you have, you know, multiple people that can break 340, and you get these dense fields together, and everyone's at the highest level. And there's, you know, obviously you have some contenders that are pretty consistent with their performances, but you have, you know, it's interesting too, because you have people targeting different races and how they're tapering and preparing for these races. But like you mentioned, like we have, you know, three people that went 1, 2, 3 in the men's side that are relatively, you know, people that we haven't really heard much about. And it just shows you that, you know, the specific training for triathlon and just the science behind it. Now everyone's on the same playing field, and it boils down to putting together an outstanding performance on the right day.
Right. I just think that the room for error among the top athletes, it's much smaller, and it's to an extent, it's a coin flip, you know, on who's going to win. Obviously athletes like Eden, Christian, Magnus have been pretty dominant, but at the 70.3 distance, especially, I think it's looking more and more like the Olympic distance. The Ironman, it's still, I think there are fewer surprises or sort of like when I was saying that the men's field is deeper than the women's, I was mainly talking about, you know, how close are the athletes in the top 10.
Yeah.
And the men's, you had 6 minutes separate the top 10, the women's side, I think it was like 14. So I'm saying that the top athletes in the women's, they're a little more dominant right now at the 70.3 distance against the field than I would argue the men are. And, you know, I think we're kind of approaching just more athletes are getting closer to, you know, the limits of what the human body can actually do. We know like how much more optimized can we get? You know, I say that, and, you know, it's probably likely that we can be substantially more optimized, but we're more optimized than we ever have been. And you just have to look at the bike splits to understand that that's the case. You know, I remember 5 to 10 years ago, like nobody would break 2 hours in a 70.3 bike. Remember when like Andrew Starkowitz did that, everybody lost their mind. I think he went sub four at Texas and an Ironman. And that was a big deal. But I'm trying to remember, like, the point is that you had how many guys go under 2 hours on this course. And again, this was not a short course, a short flat course. Like this is like a pretty honest course. You know, the exact distance, I don't know if it was exactly 56, but I mean, it was
close.
It was close.
Yeah.
Close enough. And so it was honest. This wasn't like a, you know, course from the Middle East where they deliberately make it short. And they, it seems like the motos, you just have a fleet of them that athletes can draft off of.
Yeah.
Yes, there was a moto and there was probably some drafting going on, but that's part of the race to an extent. I mean, ideally the moto should not be contributing to drafting at all. Whoever the lead cyclist is should not be drafting off of that moto. And, you know, I have no idea if that occurred at this race, but the point is that these athletes are flying, like going impossibly fast. And they are putting out a lot of watts. You know, everybody is putting out a lot of watts. And, you know, Miguel, for example, I won't say, you could probably look in Strava if he made it public, but, you know, he finished, he did really well. You know, he rode 206. He was 31st in the race, which is he rode 207, sorry. And he was 31st. So, I mean, that's a solid split on the bike course. And he put out power comparable to a lot of the guys who went under 2 hours. But the thing is, the as you know, Miguel continues to progress and gain experience at the pro level, he'll be able to compete head to head. And this was a stepping stone, but, you know, I encourage you, I know that Jen and Miguel, they did a Q&A on YouTube. I encourage you to go check that out. But, you know, he put out power similar to a lot of the guys who went under 2 hours, but it's interesting because just like in the swim where there's a very strong takeout and the top swimmers try to separate from everybody else, which is becoming harder to do because everybody is optimizing their swim and you have to be balanced and basically elite at swim, bike, and run if you want to compete at the world stage in triathlon. But we're finding that the 70.3 bike leg is structured the same way now in that athletes are going out hard. They're trying to break away from the poor cyclists because the draft effect is huge, mm-hmm. especially at the Ironman level where we were talking about before. What is it? 12 meters for the pros.
That's right. Yeah. 12 meters.
And that is not a lot. But the thing is, if it's 20, it's the field gets strung out. And it's similar to pass somebody is very difficult at that point, but, and then you pass one person, you're going to have to pass, you know, all 40 athletes to, you know what I mean? You can't slot in with that 20 meter gap. It's a challenge. And at this point, I think the fact is it's long course is becoming a little bit more like the Olympic distance and that you need to come out in that top pack. The top pack is going to work together and hammer to try to distance and maintain that swim gap or build upon it. So tactics matter more now than they did in the past. Whereas in the past, it kind of was like to an extent more of a pure time trial.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's more heads up racing. And I looked at the power data of the top men in the field, just because I think that everybody was closer, and it's interesting to look at that, you know, compared to the women's field where it got like kind of strung out more. But you had, for example, you know, if we look at, so I mean, Rico put out insane power according to Strava, 373 watts in the first 15 miles is what he averaged, and in the last 25 he averaged 346 watts. But what's notable is that's a 27 watt difference. So that shows you how much harder, you know, he went, and that trend applies to basically everybody in the top 10 that I looked at, where they put out 20 to 30 watts more in the first 15 miles of the race than they did in the last 25 miles of the bike leg. So he's a good example of that. Frederick Funk, who absolutely, he is a great cyclist. He, I think, made the bike leg some, I mean, what it was to an extent. He averaged 353 in the first 15 miles and 330 in the last 25 miles. So yeah, that's a 23 watt difference. Jan Stratmann, 338 at the beginning, 306 at the end. That's a 32 watt difference. So it is interesting that spread, and that spread holds. But you know, these athletes are putting out tremendous power. Mm-hmm. That's probably 5 years ago, that kind of power output would have raised eyebrows, and we would have been like, holy crap. Now all of these athletes can do it. You know, Lionel, I'd still categorize him as an Uber biker, but you know, a lot of athletes can ride what he can ride now, and just they can put out the same power, and their CDA is low. So we're getting to the point where everybody is optimized on the bike. Everybody is going to the wind tunnel or doing CDA testing to get as slippery as possible. Everybody's tracking, you know, the data. They're way more scientific about it than in years past. And you have to ride your bike really, really fast, obviously, to a greater extent than in prior years, I think, too. It's just the sport has changed, and it is continuing to change. And, you know, it's a pretty young sport still. And I think that we're continuing to optimize things. But it was an impressive race. It's exciting to watch.
Yeah.
And also special shout out to Mark Dubrick, who had an awesome race. So he was the top American. And he went, so he was
eighth at 3:38:28.
Yeah. And he ran with a 110 run. So that was
an amazing run.
Excellent work. And you know, just looking at the bike, you know, 324 watts, first 15 miles, 304 watts, the last, 25. So not, I mean, that's, he's slippery, and his mm-hmm. tactically, I think he nailed it. You know, those watts aren't massive compared to other people. So strategy plays a role too. And so top American beating a lot of the guys who historically have been top American finishers. It's again, a little bit maybe of a changing of the guard, but you know, I'm sure Canute, he's going to be back in full steam, full fitness, and he'll crush it in the future. And same with Hansen and all that. But you know, I mean, just talking a little bit about Miguel, you know, working triathlete, cause obviously he's on the team, that he put out the power. Keep an eye on Miguel, not to apply pressure, but, you know, just good things from him. He's doing the work, and man, he proved that he can win a North American 70.3 and compete with the world's best, truly, in his first pro season. That's pretty awesome. So kudos to him, and excited to see what the future holds on that front, because we are just getting started there. So
yeah,
good things.
He's proved he belongs, and he put together a great performance. But it is interesting, like you talked about the power output from the beginning to the, you know, the first 15, 20 miles to the last 15, 20 miles. And it's like a game of cat and mouse out there. Like you have the people that are trying to get away from the runners, and then you have the runners trying to stay with the cyclists to bridge that gap. And so it leads to an interesting race. You know, people are, like you mentioned, racing head to head now, where you're removing just the solo single sport athletes. You know, they have to be well-balanced. Mm-hmm. Even the swim, it's so important now. Like you had to come out of the water with everyone else. Otherwise you're going to be solo out there.
Right.
And
it seems like everybody has worked on their swim a lot.
Yeah.
At this race, I mean, people were talking about it as just being composed of one big swim pack. And, you know, to an extent, I think that is correct. Some of the weaker swimmers, no, they were only a minute or 90 seconds or 2 minutes behind, whereas normally they might be double that. You know, you can attribute that maybe to the size of the field and the caliber. Like 41 athletes finished the race. I think like 60 something were on the start list, but you know, that's a fairly big field diving into the water starting, and it's a little bit easier to draft in, mm-hmm. in a race like this. So, you know, arguably mass starts, they might benefit the weaker swimmers a little bit. I mean, mass start in the sense of many pro athletes towing the line.
Yeah,
yeah,
you have the
it
draft
depends what
effect.
happens, but yeah.
Yeah, there's the draft effect, and then you also have it when everyone's competing at that level, you're kind of just forced to go with everyone. You know, otherwise, you just miss your opportunity to hang with them on the bike.
Right. So, you know, I know that obviously, you know, I often think in terms of the athletes who I follow, who have been around a while and who win sort of the races in this part of the world. But I think a lot of athletes have spent a lot of time in the water and they're working on that swim, because you can't, if you're a pro, you gotta have it. You gotta bring the heat in the water. And go out hard. And it was funny, I think Miguel, you know, he was like, you know, 500 or 800 meters into the swim, it's just, he's out there, he's one of the top swimmers, and just getting clobbered. And I'm sure he was doing some clobbering, but it's like a washing machine. It's, even if you're not trying to dunk people, like, it just happens. Mm-hmm. Everybody is trying to be well positioned. He's like, yeah, I did not want to be there. He was like, I don't want to be here right now. But, you know, you just have it to that calm mind and get it done. And Miguel had a good swim. He was basically in that front pack, that string of athletes. I think he was about 20 seconds off of the front, just with, but it was a steady procession. But it was, yeah, so it was a interesting world championships on a fair course, and it made for interesting viewing, watching Rico take it. Everybody was like, who the heck is this guy? But
yeah,
it was, so kudos to him.
One other thing would be worth talking about is the disqualification that Lionel Sanders received.
Yeah.
And this is interesting because, you know, you look at the rule books, everyone's been analyzing what's written down, and it is a little unclear what you do during a bike leg when there's no center line on the road. And, you know, apparently, so if, for those that are listening, if you don't know, Lionel was disqualified for crossing the center of the road on the bike course. And allegedly it was a narrow road without a center line. And the official told him that he needs to imagine a line that's there, which can be difficult to do, you know, in the middle of a race. And there's a lot of people talking about it because there's video evidence of other pros crossing the line, and they obviously did not receive the same punishment during the race. And it kind of begs the question, like, how do we create a fair race, you know, create a safe race, but also ensure, you know, that nothing's overlooked as well. And it's going to be tough to, you know, do this, I think, as these fields are spread out on the bike course. You know, how do you catch everything, but how do you also, is there room for discretion, you know, in a case like this where the rules are a little unclear?
Yeah. I mean, my position is that he should not have been disqualified. You know, you're getting around people, you're trying to pass them. You don't want to be passing them right next to each other. Like, it was a narrow road. You got, it's a race. Like, mm-hmm. You gotta just kind of let him race at a certain point. If nobody is in immediate danger, you just let them race. You know, it's brutal. Like, these athletes work their asses off, travel across the world to compete and at the event. And then you have these like fuddy-duddy race officials, like, being kind of silly with the penalties. And, you know, I don't know the whole story, but I mean, come on. He was passing, and then he was going to get it back over, and, or at least like offer a warning.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, a disqualification is absurd in my mind. I mean, it's a bike race and you're on a closed road. It's,
yep,
like, can we be reasonable here? The the rules, they have to be, they're written for an ideal course, you know, and the fact of the matter is triathlon and triathlon courses are dynamic, and there are situations where it's dangerous not crossing over the middle of a narrow road mm-hmm. with no line in the middle of the forest in a race to get around athletes safely. It's kind of stupid, the whole thing. So I feel bad for Lionel, and
yeah.
it just sucks. It's an unfortunate situation.
I think back to when we raced in Nice, descending down the mountain. You know, they really stressed that we did not cross the center line, but
oh, that was stupid.
Every athlete, yeah. you had to. If you couldn't see the apex of the turn, like, you were probably going to crash or put other people in danger. And you know, that was a closed course as well. And that, I mean, they couldn't monitor that going down the hill, but it was a silly rule there. And this was a silly instance where you're messing up with the livelihood of an athlete. And I think the solution is, like, there needs to be video evidence and almost like a panel to review what's happening in the moment to make a decision. You know, like, I think back to even Sam Long's incident last year, which, you know, may have been a little bit more clear, but there's always going to be a little bit of subjectivity to these officials, you know, without any objective mm-hmm. data. Cause it's not like for drafting, for example, you can't measure the exact distance unless you're using what the PTO is using, the radar sensor. And then, like, this case, like, the rules are written that state if there's a center line in the road, and there just wasn't one. So, you know, it's hard to imagine a center line when you're in the middle of a race.
Right. So hopefully they'll fix that and offer a little bit more flexibility. If you're gonna have, like, rules like that, which are, in my opinion, just impossible to adhere to. Like, your point about that Nice course, that descent when you're, I guess, descending after you do the Col d'Avance, the roads are narrow, it's twisty. If you're going to have a rule that you can't cross the center line, and that the effective width of that lane ends up being like 6 feet because the road is so narrow and twisty, you should not have a race with thousands of athletes on that course. Like, you can't take that route because you can't descend that without going into the outer lane, without going 5 miles an hour around the turns, and nobody's going to do that. Like, it's a race, it's triathlon. It's like, it's just kind of dumb. It's like, oh, well, let's have this NASCAR race through this development, this, like, subdivision, like, suburb, and you can't go over the speed limit. It's like saying that, you know, it just doesn't align. It doesn't make sense to do it. Like, there's, like, dissonance there.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, interesting stuff to talk about regardless. And then our second topic, involves the PTO and World Triathlon. So they made a partnership, and the PTO series is going to be the long course world championship series, basically. And the long course triathlon world champion will be crowned based off of performances at, you know, the PTO series races. So that's kind of exciting. So essentially, like, right now with World Triathlon, with the championship series, which is mainly Olympic distance, I think with some sprint distances sprinkled in there, formerly ITU, it's basically the PTO is going to be the long course version of that. And the winner is going to be crowned based on points accrued over the season, just like with, you know, like car racing, like NASCAR. Or if you want to be more hoity-toity about it, what, F1 racing?
Mm-hmm.
So it's exciting. And then they're going to have age group races also. which is cool. So what are the consequences of this for age groupers? Well, you know, you can, and we've heard chattings about this over the last year. And I think was it last year at Irving? Was there an age group field?
There was, yeah.
The PTO. So maybe, was that the first one? I can't remember if there was another one.
It was the first one in the States. They may have had, I think they had one as well in Canada when they raced up in Edmonton.
So it sounds like the PTO, they decided to start making some money, generating some revenue, and then they're letting age group athletes compete, which I think makes sense from a business perspective for sure. But so age group athletes are going to be able to sign up for, you know, these PTO events and race the PTO distance. I'm not sure exactly, you know, if age groupers are going to be able to sign up for all of them. Certainly it sounds like they could sign up for like the five regional championship races, as I understand it. So like Asia, Europe, the Americas, Africa, Oceania. Is that how you pronounce that? Oceania?
Yeah, I'll just call Australia.
O-C-E-A-N-I-A. Oceania.
Yeah,
I want to say Oceania, but there's an I in it. Oceania. But that doesn't sound like it should sound. I don't know if I've ever uttered that word out loud before. But
I believe it just covers the two countries down there, Australia and New Zealand.
Exactly. So it's the 100K distance, as we all know. So more swim heavy than the traditional long course races. Because it has a 2K swim, but you know, everything, what is it, an 18K run, and the bike is, how many kilometers is it?
I think it's 80K.
So
yeah, 2K, 80K, 18K.
Yeah, so that'll be exciting, and there will be the opportunity for age groupers to qualify for the world championships at these long course races. And you qualify through that basically through via the pathway that your national federation lays out. So, you know, as I interpret that, you know, this December in the US, we have Clash Daytona, and that is billed as the USA Triathlon Long Course National Championships. And if you do well there, you can qualify for the Long Course World Championships. And now it sounds like, well, that's going to be basically the same venue event as the PTO World Championships. So that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. One thing I understand as well is the courses will be different. So, you know, we got to experience age group nationals in Milwaukee this year. Obviously, the pro race was a different distance than the Olympic and sprint distance, but I think what'll be unique about this opportunity, if I understand it correctly, age groupers will always have the opportunity to watch the pro race. So there's going to be a multiple day event, and that was pretty exciting in Milwaukee at age group nationals. And if they continue, because they want to make sure for the pros, it's they can create a great product for television. And the only way to do that is if you have a short, a looped course, essentially. And, you know, I think they had, what, 7 or 8 bike loops and then however many run loops. And when you do that, obviously when it's condensed, it's easier to film, easier to create a product to air on TV. So from my understanding, like the courses will be similar for the pros, but the age groupers I'd imagine will be probably traditional to what you see now in long course. Cause you obviously couldn't have a long course race with 3,000 athletes out on the same course doing loops.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's interesting, actually. Yeah. They'll probably be different courses, kind of like at Clash Daytona, where the pro race back in the day, i.e. last year and prior years, they used to, I mean, the pro race occurred entirely in the stadium and mm-hmm. the bike was just the racetrack, but the age group race, you left the track there, the speedway, and then you you know, biked on the roads out and back, and then ran on the infield. But that's true. That's interesting. But, you know, I will say that it was really fun watching watching the U.S. Open, the PTO U.S. Open in Milwaukee. It was a blast seeing everybody. Those looped courses are fun to spectate at. So looking forward to that for sure.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the dynamic of a long course, you know, as athletes choose between the PTO distance and obviously 70.3. You know, we see a lot of athletes now bouncing back and forth, but at some point I'd imagine certain people will gravitate towards the race that suits them best to prolong their career and obviously make a living as a pro athlete as well.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously the PTO races, they offer a lot of prize money. It's tough to get into them, but I'm glad they're around for sure. I love what they're doing. And I mean, anything that elevates triathlon and attracts more eyes is awesome. And it seems like they're doing a great job. Hopefully growing the sport and supporting pro athletes. Obviously I know they've received some criticism about really catering to just like the super, super top level pros. And honestly, the prize money is sort of structured that way, in that the winner received an outrageous amount of money, you know, like 100K, second place 50K, and then a dramatic decrease, which is fine. Like, the winner should be rewarded more than the person who finishes 10th. But it might be a little bit lopsided. I don't know. I don't have a strong opinion on that. But I think there is a benefit to having, you know, big quality pro fields and maximizing the number of like encouraging more athletes to make a run at being professional triathletes. Cause you know, each individual professional hopefully inspires, you know, a few hundred other athletes to take up the sport. So the more competitive athletes we have at the pro level, and the greater the likelihood of somebody, you know, who's pursuing triathlon, the more opportunities they have to pursue triathlon and actually sustain themselves, I think is a net good, assuming we want the sport to grow. And I think we do. Obviously we're biased because our livelihood depends on it, but you know, it's a good sport and more people should try it.
Yeah.
It's healthy and it makes you better.
I'd be curious to know if there's anyone that listens to this podcast that is not a triathlete. You know, if you're out there, shoot us an email, because I want to know.
I would love to know. Why are you listening? Our soothing voices, maybe. Some type of ASMR effect. But that's, so the PTO, good things there, exciting things as it relates to long course world triathlon. And it should be interesting to age groupers as well. And maybe you took your pro card.
So. I did. And like you mentioned, you know, you said some of these pros inspire other people to make the leap. And, you know, I saw Jan win in Milwaukee and he's like 41 or 42 years old.
You've got some time.
And I'm thinking to myself, like, and I'm watching these guys too. And I'm like, man, like these guys, they bleed the same blood I do. They look just like me. Why not just give it a go? And, I officially took my elite license, and I am currently training more than I ever have in my life before the baby comes. And, you know, I'll make my debut pretty soon. Ideally, if the baby comes, you know, within the next few days, I will probably race Michigan 70.3. However, I'm prepared to push that back to Augusta. Or, you know, if that doesn't work out, then it's going to be Indian Wells. So it's pretty fluid right now. Just really depends on the arrival. But yeah, like, I'm excited, honestly. Like, it gave me a refreshed sense of excitement for the sport. And, you know, I, in the past, I always told people I'd never do it because I kind of was satisfied with race at the age group level. But after seeing Yan win, I was like, well, he's 41. I'm 35 right now. I'll be 36 next year. Well, why not just give it a go? Because for me, the difference in the past was, or the concern was, I didn't want to be on the bike all by myself, you know, and miss a swim pack. And, you know, I've done a few 70.3s and done very well at them. And there's very few people I see on the bike. So there's realistically, you know, the dynamic might not change a whole lot for me if I move up to the pro field. And if not, it can only be enhanced if I can stay with the swim pack and get on the bike with them. It'll be good. So, but yeah, I'm excited. And a lot more people were excited about it than I thought would be. I received a lot of praise and things like that. But I am honest with myself with understanding that I'm never going to be the Jans or the Christian Blumenfelds, but I want to inspire others, you know, that have a busy livelihood and understand, like, you can still put time in the sport and pursue, you know, your endeavors and do well at it, you know, if you balance your life well.
Well said, for sure. Yeah, I think that you have the ability to hang on the bike and be a viable pro. I think that, you know, if you spend twice as much time in the water, which is possible, as you have over the past like 10 years, you'll be able to make that swim pack. And your bike looked strong. I mean, your bike is stronger than ever. So I'm excited to see what happens in your first few pro races. I'm trying to think. I won't be at any of those races, but I need to show up at one and cheer you on. So that's exciting news. And the last thing we wanted to talk about briefly was this concept of testing and, you know, sort of lab testing. There are various tests you can do. And one thing that I wanted to announce is that in Nashville, the new Working Triathlete headquarters is at a facility. And we partnered with Transformation Labs. So, you know, Kurt Lockhart runs that, and went to college at Vanderbilt with Kurt, and you know, he started this performance lab and just acquired and renovated this awesome facility in Nashville. And it offers various testing. So there's a DEXA in there, which is the most accurate body fat measurement technology available. You can do VO2 max threshold testing. We can do, there's a bod pod in there. There is an entire gym in there, so we can do biomechanical analysis and you know, other tests in there. And what's additionally exciting is that there's going to be this Fusion membership, and it involves, so there's actually a medical director at the facility. So Dr. Jake, he is a physician, and he is offering he could be your primary care physician, and it's sort of this holistic offering wherein, you know, he will be able to review, you know, your cardiorespiratory fitness. And, you know, for athletes I work with, if they start working with him, you know, we can sort of work together to provide, you know, a more thorough training regimen and give you a better picture of your overall metabolic health. You know, they can leverage AI algorithms from the DEXA scan, and, you know, we'll do lipid panels and various other tests, you know, especially blood tests, to ensure that, you know, each person who, you know, pursues this is as healthy as possible. So there is a membership, and it involves, you know, different visits with Dr. Jake, basically, you know, again, primary care check-in visits. It'll include 8 physiology lab test credits per year. So again, we're talking about body comp, like through the DEXA, metabolic rate. So you can do a resting metabolic rate test where you breathe into this device and it will tell you exactly, you know, how many calories you burn each day, you know, non-exercise, your base metabolic rate. And it also includes the fitness capacity, the VO2 testing. And with that VO2 testing, we can get at your VO2 max, you know, your anaerobic threshold. We can identify what substrates you're burning at different paces or power outputs, because, you know, this is being offered. You can do the treadmill test, or you could bring in your bike and do this, you know, use the CPET to establish these metrics. You'll know where your VO2 max is, and we'll know at what power that is. At what power do you hit VO2 max? What power do you hit anaerobic threshold? So it's powerful stuff, and it's pretty awesome in that, you know, so, you know, you can obviously come and do these tests on your own, or, you know, you can partner with Jake and have direct access to your physician. And also, again, if you want to do endurance coaching, you can work with me, or I can also advise on different endurance training protocols, even if one does not want to be coached. So there are a lot of services. So check out Transformation Labs in Nashville, and anybody on the team who we coach. I mean, certainly, I know a lot of athletes come to Nashville for just impromptu training camps. You know, we have official training camps for athletes on the team, but many athletes just come on random weekends because we have a steady cadence of group workouts in Nashville. And any weekend you come, there will be a long ride. There will be a long run. And you can also pair it now with these lab tests. So we're excited about it. The facility is awesome. And don't hesitate to reach out to me if you have any questions, or reach out directly to Transformation Labs and tell them that Working Triathlete sent you.
Yeah, it's going to be some exciting stuff. You know, it's going to enhance, you know, our ability to coach. It's going to enhance, you know, the performance of the athletes, and it's all around a great product.
It's, yeah, and especially, I think the way to think about it, and this sort of partnership that Transformation has with the physician, Dr. Jake, is it's really a focus on disease prevention and health promotion rather than, you know, treating the symptoms. And I think this is the direction that hopefully, I sort of hope, medical care, certainly in this country, is moving, where your doctor will not just ask what hurts, or, you know, how are you feeling, blah, blah, blah. Oh, well, here are these medications that'll help. It's like, okay, here are your numbers. Here's what we need to do to make these numbers improve so that you can live a long, healthy life. So it's like health span, like maximizing the duration of your healthy lifespan. Because, you know, it's use it or lose it. As we age, you know, you want a high VO2 max. If you want to live a long life, you need to have a high VO2 max. And there are obviously ways to do that. So obviously, you and I, we work with a lot of high level athletes who are looking to go as fast as they possibly can. But we also work with athletes who are maybe older and they aren't as competitive, but they're looking to get more enjoyment out of the sport, embrace the adventure, and also live longer and stay healthier. So this is a good initiative that I think is brilliant, and that will help a lot of athletes. So again, check out Transformation Labs and this Fusion membership that I'm talking about is that partnership that you can have with Dr. Jake. So it's pretty cool. So we're excited. That is probably the most exciting thing that's happened in Nashville that's Working Triathlete related.
I would argue it's the most exciting thing that's happened in the triathlon world right now.
It probably is. Well, that's the thing. It's, you know, we're talking about the remarkable performances of the athletes, the pro athletes at Worlds. And it's like, why are there so many athletes putting out mid 300s on the bike? And it's because we know the numbers. We know, you know, LT1 or aerobic threshold. We know anaerobic threshold or LT2. We know what percentage of anaerobic threshold or of anaerobic threshold LT1 occurs at. We know what percentage of VO2 max anaerobic threshold occurs at. We know how to, we're looking at VLA max now, you know, with working triathlete, we're leveraging inside testing for that. And we are getting extremely scientific with the athletes who we're working with. And obviously the results are paying off. If an athlete is willing to do the work and nail every workout and emphasize recovery and recovery like a mad person, they can reach their genetic potential at this point. Like we're definitely leveraging cutting edge science, you know, on this team, and these opportunities are available to the athletes if they want to pursue it. Obviously reaching one's genetic potential does require a lot of sacrifice. You can't say I want to train 10 hours a week and reach my genetic potential. And certainly you can perform incredibly well, and we love optimizing performance within, you know, a lower volume training plan, and we know how to do that. But you know, when I'm talking about like the Miguels of the world, so Miguel, obviously he's our top pro at on working triathlete right now. You know, he's competing with the best in the world, and he, you know, number one, he does the work, he does the little things, he's committed and meticulous, and he recovers really, 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 really well. And he does big volume, and he has the discipline to recover. So the reason he's good is that discipline and commitment, paying attention to the little things. And part of that is dialing everything in. Part of that is dialing everything in the lab. So you know, we're excited about it, and we're looking to grow that and make it so that if anybody wants to explore these things, you know, use a lactate meter in training, leverage that. Like we are better equipped now to do all of that and advise in person. You know, we're also going to start using a MOXIE sensor, which measures basically oxygen saturation in the capillaries and the muscles. So, and you can measure all that in real time. So a lot of exciting technology is becoming more widespread in the endurance training world. And obviously we're staying on the cutting edge of all that.
Super exciting stuff for sure. I can't wait to get down there and check out the new space.
You're going to like it. It is beautiful. So, if anybody listening is interested in reaching out to us, feel free to email us at info@workingtriathlete.com or submit a form through our website, and a coach or one of us will get back to you as soon as we can.
Awesome. Well, thanks for listening. And until next time, like Conrad said, if you have any questions or want to reach out, send us an email.
See ya.
See ya.